This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
We can take a lot from these last games, starting our post-13 game where we didn't win a hockey game. There's areas of our game that we're trying to focus on real hard, take this one game at a time. We took a step back in Philadelphia with the way we managed that game and managed the puck and gave up the odd-numbered rushes that, you know, allowed Philly to win the hockey game. And we're trying to get to a point where we don't give away chances like that. And I thought the Washington game, we got right back on track. And, you know, I said post-game, I thought we played what I felt was our best second period of the year.
That was Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff earlier today with Jeremy and Nate. They play tonight in Ottawa, 7 p.m. puck drop, 6 p.m. pregame. They've had very exciting games the last three.
Oh, my God. It has been, I don't know what it is, but the
a lot of scoring.
The goal slider has moved up on the Sabres right now.
7-4-8 has been their goal totals in the last three games.
Yeah, and the one where they scored four, they let up seven.
Yeah.
So,
in the last three
Sabres games, there's one team that has at least scored seven goals. It's disgusting.
What do you want to see from this last stretch here?
Something to hold on to. Mm-hmm. That is my premise with the Sabres at this point, is give me something tangible to hold on to for the next year. Whether that is, I want to see if Jack Quinn can finish consistently down the stretch, or I want to see Yuri Kulik making that step and solidifying himself as a top six threat for a center position. I need something that can show me that the Sabres are going to be not okay, but like I need something to cling on to. Am I still going to watch them? Absolutely. We have a job to do here. I want it to stop being just about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thing. But a lot of that work, the yeoman's work about the Buffalo Sabres, is going to be this offseason.
But you want to have something to hold on to going into free agency and the draft.
Yes, I want something on the ice that's going to tell me that there's some sort of stabilizing going on. For example, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is not giving me a whole heck of a lot of hope right now. Can he right the ship with whatever games he has left? And it's going to be, after tonight, they have the 3 days off, and then it is basically every other day, if not days in a row. So we will see Luukkonen to end the stretch.
Yeah.
I do think there has to be something from Luukkonen that I can go, okay, maybe he's not cooked. Or show me that he is.
Yeah, kind of close that book.
Give me an answer. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. I want answers to things. Is Josh Norris going to get shut down for the rest of the year, and should I have more concerns about him? Or does he come back and finish the rest of the season playing for the team? That would be very encouraging to me. I need answers is more or less what I want, and it would help shape the direction of what the offseason has to be.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that yesterday where I think we all kind of got there that like Mitch Marner would be fun. He's not really the main concern. It is goaltending and maybe to a more realistic standpoint, top four defense. You got to add another defenseman. Goaltending, it might just be you add a veteran guy who can man the ship if Levi's not having a great night. I'm really at that point now with him having two great years in the AHL. They're probably going to have a deep playoff run, or hopefully have a deep playoff run this year in the AHL. Him continue to put up those gaudy numbers, and then just, all right, it's time. It's your show now. They paid Luukkonen off of what seemed to be a little bit over half a year of good play. Maybe he's a tradable asset. Maybe you've maybe got your veteran guy in Reimer. I think that's my thing, too, is I'd like to know, is Reimer the veteran, or do we have to go in a different direction? That's something I'd like to know as well. Because you mentioned we're going to see more Luukkonen, but to his credit, Lindy Ruff is not here to just play Luukkonen.
No. And now, though, like after today, you're going to have to play both of them.
Yep.
Just because the schedule is going to dictate it. Unless there's a back-to-back game and a player has a shutout and you want to ride that hot hand through, I'm expecting you're going to see the goaltenders every other night after tonight.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to be, we got to do this.
Let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Talked a lot in the first hour of the NFL rule changes. We have something else as well. We'll get to that here in just a second, talking the Sabres now. But we'll get today started, and we'll go to Mike here on the line. Mike, you're on WGR.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
My concern is that, you know, this end of the season rush goals and the team seems to be playing a little bit better is just going to make Kevin Adams believe that this team is good enough. I mean, our goaltending is weak. Our defensive play is very weak. Our special teams are terrible. We've got some decent 5-on-5. But, you know, you look at the guys that he acquired, you know, we've got one guy that's producing, and the rest of the guys that he acquired in the off season, I mean, Malmstrom and Lafferty and Obey, whatever his name is, you know, we need a new GM. And my concern is that our owner is going to look at this and say, oh, this is looks good. We're starting to score goals. All we need now is a goalie. Well, we spent a lot of money on a goalie that's having a terrible year. No one's going to want him. No one's taking his salary off of our books. He can't go down to Rochester. We're paying him $5.5 million a year, and he's been brutal this year. And that's the problem. These things that he's done over the last two or three years in terms of bringing it. What's he going to do with Bo Byram? Here's a guy that's going to want $7-9 million a year. Is Bo Byram, who was supposed to be this offensive defenseman, how many goals does he have this year? I mean, he's okay. The Samuelson deal, what we paid for Samuelson over the next number of years, he's a bottom two defenseman. He's not that good. His decision-making has been terrible. And my concern is that all this is going to do is let him say, oh, see, we're getting better at the end of the year. We're just a player away instead of blowing up this team.
Mike, thanks for the call. I'm with you there to the end. I don't think you need to blow up the team. I think they are just a few pieces away. I will say, though,
if the general manager does nothing,
yeah,
that's the problem.
That's the problem. I will say, though, the fear I can fully understand of, are they going to go on this run and have everyone believe, oh, no, we were right. It actually is just in this room. We need like one fourth line guy again. Because that's ultimately what Beck Malenstein and Sam Lafferty and Nicholas Abe-Cobell kind of were. They were depth pieces on
not even ready.
To rebuild the bottom six.
Can you do better with your fourth line selections? Yes. But they are fourth liners available through free agency. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're going to be good. Let's make that abundantly clear. I'm not going to really go into it about and dig too deep about the fourth liners. I don't like the price that he paid for Malenstein, for example. I don't think that was a value thing that that he did. But I'm not like, yeah, you signed Nick Aube-Kubel and Sam Lafferty, and they were bad. More at 11.
more at 11.
Like, bad. Like, yes, you could do better identifying fourth line players for your squad. But am I going to get mad about that? No. The points that he's actually hanging up on, that are hanging more to me, I should say, are, you know, that he was a little quick with some of these extensions, or he's extending the players upon their best seasons.
Yeah.
And I do think that that is something that needs to be
Cousins worth before this. He's
noting.
No longer on the team, but Cousins is one of them.
Samuelson
he's brought up.
Luukkonen.
Yep.
Those are not good extensions. He did sign Tage to one of the bigger discounts in the National Hockey League. You have a 40-goal scorer at $7 million. But it's simple as this. Adam should know what they have at goalie is not good enough, and they need to do something about it. And he cannot go back into the next season going, okay, Luukkonen, Levi, when he wants it, take it. You can't have that again. Mm-hmm. You need a solid veteran that can play and challenge for a starting role the majority of the games. That's what it has to be.
Yep.
Also, please fix up the defense.
That's a big thing for me on the Bo Byram thing. Yes, he's an offensive defenseman. He only has 7 goals. He has 35 points, though.
He has 35 points, which is a career best for him.
But he's also right around where Power is. Darlene's better than the two of them. He's well above them. His more my fear with Byram is when he is no longer with Darlene, his underlying numbers are horrendous.
His underlying numbers are bad.
So that's more my fear with Byram is that when he's not with Darlene, it's bad. I will also say, and this is more my big point, this is maybe putting too much faith into a team that is on a historic playoff drought in the NHL. They have done this before. They have gone on these stretch runs to end a year where they clearly don't want to stop playing hockey. They want to play off, what have you. And they look really good. And then it falls apart. I think we've seen that enough. I think management has seen that enough to know, okay, we know the talent's there. You guys need help, though, to get you through the beginning parts of the year where they've had bad runs. We heard the Lindy clip. That's where the 13-game losing streak came from, was that beginning of the year where all of a sudden it was like, oh, cool, we're done. Yeah. Or the fact of how bad they were in Europe to open up the season, put them immediately in a hole where the Devils just killed you.
And now it comes down to, I don't care if it's unwillingness or if it's inability. If you go the offseason without adding major pieces to shuffle the roster around, not quite blowing it up, but you do need to make sure that like some players are moving down the lineup with a couple of impactful moves.
Yeah.
If you don't do it, whether you think that the room has the answers or if you just weren't able to pull it off, that's a performance-based issue and people do lose their jobs for that. Adams is already in enough hot water. He cannot have another offseason of relative inactivity.
Well, and I mentioned it yesterday too. He's already at a point where he's surpassed what most GMs should. It's 5 years of no playoffs, and you're sitting at the bottom of the East. They likely won't finish there just based off of games in hand and how they are playing and how teams at the bottom of the East are playing as well. But through 5 years, you're still bad. You're still one of the worst teams in the East. You're still not really that close to a playoff spot. That's why for me it was like, I wouldn't be surprised if he just says, screw it, I'm going for it. We're making big moves. We're making splash moves. And they do get active because he's sitting there going, I'm not going to get another general manager spot in the NHL.
No.
I already had way too much time with Buffalo, arguably, based on my performance. And even then, you could argue it was more of a cheap hire to just get someone in the seat and then move forward. Ultimately, he had some pretty strong early success in terms of rebuilding the scouting department. The drafting was much better. They had to make some trades they didn't really like, but this is a team that for like 10 years couldn't get a second-round pick
right,
to be an NHL player. And then now J.J. Paterka is, what, third? Second. He's second on the team in points. And he looks like a stud.
Probably not stud, but at least a top six consistent contributor. Yep.
Granato for a little while there looked like, oh, you found diamond in the rough there with a coach because Ralph Kruger was a disaster, but Granato's assistant appeared to be good. That fell apart. And that really, I think, becomes a big part of this whole thing is that players, management, what have you, have real nice blips of success.
Get rewarded for it.
And then get rewarded. Yeah.
And then
the real thing
shows.
Yeah. And I think that's maybe been their biggest issue is that there's been blips of success. And a lot of people were worried about that with Tage last year. Mm-hmm. Was he one of those guys where all of a sudden he's going to put up, what, 45 goals, 50 goals, and then tailspins, and it's bad. He's back to what he was, you know, 2 years ago, but there was real fears that he was the same thing that a lot of these guys are.
Yeah.
And so for me, there has been enough that I feel like the Sabres will be forced into action because they've already been fooled once or twice from this.
Exactly. And I think that is, again, when we get to the offseason, we will find that answer out. If the general manager truly has the chops to retain his position, he can't do nothing, whether it's by unwillingness or inability, I don't care. There needs to be results.
Yep. Let's go back to the phones. Brian is with us. Brian, how are we doing?
Hi, yes. Thanks for taking my call, gentlemen.
Thanks for calling.
You know what? You know, I'm sorry. The goaltending is what's really, you know, stressing me out.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a number one goaltender. I remember back in the day, you know, 20 years ago, I don't know if it was that long, you had Dominic Hasek and Marty Brown. You had a starter and a backup. And, of course, you know, it just, it's kind of like running water off a faucet. I mean, it stems with the goaltending. And I think Lindy Ruff, actually, this is my opinion, maybe Lindy Ruff should be the GM. And bye-bye. You know, so.
Yeah, Brian, thanks for the call. Maybe president of hockey ops, if you want to do something like that. No.
Lindy's a coach.
Yeah, Lindy's a coach.
And we saw a coach, a very successful coach, go into the foray of being a general manager in Nashville. And it is a disaster. So, look.
We've also done that in Buffalo.
Yeah. So I think we're good on that.
Bills.
Yeah, I think we're good on that. Please
work.
Don't.
Didn't work.
If Lindy wants to keep being the coach, well, he's got one more year left. And yeah, if he remember, wants to sign up for like president of hockey ops, sure. But I don't want to trust a coach to be a general manager because Lindy has never sat in a front office in his life.
No, and that's the thing too. If we're really going to talk potentially post Adams, their next general manager hire has to be somebody with legitimate credibility within the league, has been there and done it as a GM.
Exactly. Honestly,
that needs to be the next hire. I don't care what the name is. It needs to be I've been there and done
it. You're
going to
care about the name.
Well, Chuck Fletcher, sure. But
yeah,
you know,
I was going to say, if you get a Chuck Fletcher or a Peter Chiarelli.
Sure, I don't disagree. But at a certain point, it'll also be I just need somebody that's been there and done it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty much like if it's like a Chiarelli or a Fletcher. I've got this game called Frogger that I'd like to play.
I mean, at least Fletcher's fun. It's probably not fun when he's your GM, but I enjoy it.
No. As your GM, like, that's a pit of, like, we think that the Adams thing has been bad. If they hire Chuck Fletcher, be ready for, like, the reacquisition of Rasmus Ristolainen or something.
Let's go. For a first-round pick, let's go.
Yeah, like, there's going to be, like, something wrong.
Let's go.
That, like, it's inexplainable.
I enjoy it.
So,
from afar.
But more or less, like back to the other point that he has of goaltending. Yes, that is the main thing. You cannot go back into this season, into the next one, with Luukkonen and Levi fighting for this starting position. Honestly, the plan has to be, unpopular as it may be, Levi stays in Rochester for one more start of the year. And there is a veteran playing with Luukkonen challenging for the starting role. Brian brings up, you know, having a number one goaltender. And quite honestly, like, those days are not quite there anymore.
No, it's there's like five goalies in the entire league that demand that kind of play time. It really does have to be more of a platoon system where...
It is a platoon system, but you look at the better teams in the league,
mm-hmm.
they do have that.
Oh, absolutely. But there's also only like five or six of those guys. I'm in disagreement with the Levi thing. I think we've now hit a point with him. He's played two wonderful seasons in Rochester. We'll see about if this is a long playoff run for them. I think at this point, if he can't grab it this year...
Then what do you do about Luukkonen? If he does not stabilize by the end of the year, you cannot, in good faith, march another team in here with the tandem of Luukkonen and Levi and expect to have success.
I mentioned it yesterday. Package him with a pick or a player to get him out. You got to make moves.
You got to make some moves.
And some of them are going to be painful. But like at some point, you've signed these extensions too early. Now, with him, I think that there was the issue. You kind of had to.
But if we walk around the league, for example, though, there are enough recognizable starting goaltenders mm-hmm. in playoff spots. Lightning, Vasilevsky. Panthers, Bobrovsky. Capitals. It is blanking on me right now.
I got you. I'll look it up.
Yeah, look that up. Carolina's one of those, like, Freddie Anderson's supposed to be their guy, but he ends up getting hurt often enough that mm-hmm. Kochetkov is playing a lot more games.
Oh, it's Logan Thompson. It's your guy.
Logan Thompson, yep. Of that he who should have been playing for Team USA. Ottawa, Linus Ullmark. The Rangers are not in a playoff spot, but they have Shesterkin. The Islanders are not in a playoff spot. They have Sorokin, and he's kind of the reason why the Islanders aren't complete trash because they only have 202 goals on the year. Are you kidding me?
Love them.
Pretenders. Frauds. All the time. Lou Lamoriello, how do you do it? Winnipeg, Hellebuck. Dallas, Ottinger. Knights, Aiden Hill. It is something where it's actually kind of recognizable that to be a consistent playoff team, you typically do have a goalie that is taking over the share of the starts.
Yeah, Toronto's one of the few that I know.
Toronto's one of the few.
This year they're having real good success in net, but it's two guys, Joseph Woll and Anthony Storlars.
Exactly. Like, Toronto's one of those few teams that they're actually having the success by tandem. The Devils had it forced on them because there was an injury in net for them. So that's another part of this. Like, Markstrom is still supposed to be the guy, and he is. Jake Allen had to play a lot more than usual today, this year, but it is still Markstrom's net. Like, these are all teams that are in the playoffs. And I mentioned the Rangers and Islanders, though, because, well, they are worth mentioning. They have a guy. And the Rangers are tied with Montreal for a playoff spot right now. Though no one seems to want to claim it in the Eastern Conference. But the Islanders, I mentioned it just now, they have only scored 202 goals this season. Gross. And it's not one of these, like I don't look at the Islanders as a success story or a reason that, like, why you shouldn't have a starting goaltender who is the lion's share hoarder of the starts. The one who shared the Lions' hoard, not shared, who had the Lions' share this year, has not been good enough.
No, that's right.
That is simple as that. Your starting goaltender for this season has not been good enough. And then you can also point to Boston, who is free-falling their way into even surpassing the Sabres for last place in the East. Jeremy Swayman, not good since his extension.
No, and you bring it up a lot, too. Goalies are weird.
They are also fickle.
Flat out off years. I do wonder, too, like, I don't think Lukanen's ever going to be a guy that's challenging for the Vezina, but do his numbers look better if the penalty kill defense is better or the just straight-up team defense is better?
And there is a little bit of a chicken and the egg
yes.
sort of conversation on this, but it does simply have to be, you have to be better.
Yep.
Because on the penalty kill, you have to be the best defender. And oftentimes, if you look at the goals saved above expected, especially on the penalty kill, it is bad. It is horrific, even. Like, Calgary, out in the West, like, they are the closest threat to stealing a wild card, but it does look like the West is pretty settled in. Calgary is trailing by five.
That's not great.
But they have Dustin Wolf showing up now, being the guy. And the Canucks, they have Demko. They're very comfortably in the conversation with Calgary. So it... the guy that you had this year to be the starter was not good enough.
Nope. And that's my thing, and
the problem is he only showed 1 year that he was.
But that's where I look at Levi and it's like it sucks, but all your eggs now are kind of in his basket. For a little while it was a split between him and UPL because UPL was the original. He's our young goalie coming up.
He was the original young hope in net.
But now again, you've gotten two great years out of Levi in Rochester. I don't know how
one
much.
One and a half.
But I don't know how much this fan base could stomach him starting in Rochester again. And if UPL starts slow and we got a slow start again next year.
You might need to honestly think about putting him on waivers.
Yeah. Because I don't know how that's going to go. I mean, that's what's killed them these last few years. They've been able to score and then they don't get any goaltending. Yeah. This year they can still score even with bad power play.
Even with a bad power play, they are one of the best teams at 5-on-5. You need the goaltending. And for the second time that Lukanen has been the lion's share guy, he hasn't been it.
803-0550, the number to call. Also want to touch base a little bit more on some of the draft stuff. We were talking with Sal, too, of where some teams could go. We're under a month away from the first round of the draft in Green Bay this year, by the way, which... I don't know. I'm excited to see how it goes, just depending on if I actually want Buffalo to have the draft or not. 803-0550, again, the number to call if you want to join the show. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer, you're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
You know, there's a lot of conversations right now, of course, with Tet McMillan, right, from Arizona, as far as being the wide receiver one in this class. And personally, for me, you know, I would take Keon Coleman 100 times over 100 times comparatively to Tet McMillan. As far as just athleticism, what I've seen as far as the highs, what I've seen as far as the floor, and in a situation right now where Keon's going to have Josh Allen throwing him the ball, hopefully for the next 5+ years, at least in Buffalo, I'm really excited for his future. And I know you mentioned the injury, but when he can get healthy and really become that wide receiver one, I really think this is a young player that we're going to be talking about that's going to be teasing with 1,000 yards for a long time every single year in his career. That's just my opinion.
That is Ryan Fowler yesterday with Mike Schoep. Ryan Fowler of the Draft Network. Love when he's on. We've had him on. I think he's
Had him on this show, and I want to have him on again.
Yeah, I love him as a draft expert. I do like, though, and I said this to Jeremy this morning, too, off air. I like that he is not going to follow the normal trajectory of everybody. Like, even his running back class, he has Ashton Jeanty number one. He's got Marion Hampton from North Carolina just a little below him.
Yeah.
And I've always liked that. That's a bit of a hot take.
Ready? That's a scout.
But he's a huge fan of Keon Coleman. I've always loved that.
What he is that a scout will lean into his convictions.
Yeah.
That's what I like is – and, of course, we've had those things within NFL front offices, and they tend to backfire sometimes. But when you lean into your convictions, you're being genuine. That's the part that I love, is that Ryan Fowler is not going to play us as a fool for anything – like one Joshua Schmidt might today. But, yeah, I'm ready to powerbomb him, by the way, just so that everyone knows.
I didn't realize you were a big April Fool's guy. I really didn't.
I've kind of been made into it because my girlfriend is huge into April Fool's.
You did get got last year by her with probably an all-timer where she switched the salt and sugar and you put salt in your coffee.
She did it again this year. It's been revealed to me that this morning... While I was in the shower, she got out of bed, put salt in my coffee, and then went back to bed.
And then went back to bed.
It wasn't me. I was sleeping.
I thought initially she just put the salt in the bottom of the cup. But I was like, I looked in the cup. There's nothing there. And then she's like, yeah, I got up while you were in the shower, and I put the salt in the coffee, and then I went back to bed.
Incredible.
Yeah.
That's so good. Yeah. I mean, that would
salt
ruin,
in your drink.
That would ruin my day.
It has. I'm really tired because I haven't had coffee at all today. So we're vibing. It's great.
There we go.
It's great.
On the Keon Coleman thing, though.
Yeah, back to that.
Real quick. I disagree with it. Yes. So, I mean, I think that whole thing, like, I love that he will do it, but I disagree with it. I don't know. I don't see a path where Keon is a number one receiver.
And it's not
necessarily saying like he's a bad receiver. I don't see a world where he's regularly like, you've got to stop Keon Coleman when you're scouting the Bills. I don't see that future.
I agree with you there. What I will say, though, is within the Bills system, I could see him being the longer term or like at least a short term X. He is the guy on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be okay. And he'll be okay there. He'll be fine. Probably get you 800 yards every year.
Yeah, and if he can all of a sudden start getting you to 6 to 10 touchdown range every year, you're happy with that return.
Eventually, you're happy with the return considering that you traded out of the first round, you got some draft capital, and you picked someone in the second round. It was your first pick of that draft class.
Yep.
And effectively, it was treated like a first rounder.
Well, as it should be.
But at the end of the day, are you okay with a guy who ends up getting you 800 yards a year and 6 to 10 touchdowns? I think that's a comfortable player.
I think for me...
It's a player that gives you probably a decent second contract that you're not breaking the bank for.
And I'm comfortable with him if he's not the main focus.
Exactly. And I don't think... Like, last year he wasn't.
No. That's right. But I think that's where you will get other people. I know Jeremy's been on it. We've all taken callers as well of other receivers they want to see the Bills take because they will still not have that guy. And ultimately, when you do look at the successful years of the Bills these last few years, what did they have? They had that guy, Stephon Diggs. Once he got here, Allen went from a guy who was improving as a passer, kind of seemed to be like a do-it-all weapon, but wasn't that guy yet. Diggs gets here in 2020, and what does Allen become? For like 4 straight years, 4,000-yard passer, great completion percentage, great passer rating, great QB rating, and he goes through the roof. Now, we saw last year without Diggs, he's still really good. Wins the MVP. I mentioned it. It's why I think the Bills are going to play on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
But there was absolutely meat left on the bone.
There's meat left on
the
bone.
From the passing game.
In the passing game, there's meat left on the bone. And it starts with Keon Coleman taking another step. Progression is never always linear.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's able to improve on 556 yards and four touchdowns and be healthy, what you need to pick up on is you need a little bit of a better percentage from targets to receptions. He had 57 targets, only 29 catches.
Yeah, success rate there is under 50%.
He needs to get better with that. But his yards per target are great. I do think that he is going to be valuable on the outside. It is that success rate percentage, yeah. That's all it is. You improve that, even getting to the median of about 50 to 60. That's where your players typically are going to end up at some point. If you can get up to 50%, those numbers change drastically.
I just wonder where his career is at. Career. I'm making it sound like he's been in the league for a while.
And that's the other thing. He's only year two. And is there a skill set there that makes a number one wide receiver? I don't know. But
I wonder what we're talking about if he doesn't get hurt.
Yes.
And the trajectory he was on.
The trajectory he was on probably finishes with 700 yards at least. And and at his best, if he plays the whole season, at his best challenges Khalil Shakir for leading the team in receiving yards this year.
Mm-hmm.
You would, if I said your rookie wide receiver challenges for the lead on your team in reception in receiving yards, you sign that check every single day of the
week. Yeah, you're happy. You're absolutely thrilled with where that goes.
And
now,
I don't want to call Keon Coleman the Bills wide receiver version of if man. I'm not going to. It is, all right, let's see what you can do now in year two. I think the Bills are going to believe that he's going to make that next step. Could there be a little bit more investment in the position? Yes. But I look at an entire defensive secondary and I go, there's probably more you need to do there. I look at an entire defensive line structure and I go, there's definitely more you need to do there. And those are my bigger concerns before I even look at the wide receiver room.
But looking at Keon,
I even look at James Cook with his uncertainty of will he, won't he? And I go, that might be something I might pay attention more to than the wide receivers.
Mm-hmm. But real quick, looking at Keon and where his season was going and why I bring up those two games leading into the injury, everything was going up. His offensive snap percentage, he got a lot of snaps in the Miami game, 91% of the offensive snaps. And then he kind of petered around like 60, low 70s. And then those big games that he had, the first one, Tennessee, in that 34-10 win, 7 targets, 4 catches, 125 yards. Offensive snaps, 41, good for 74.5%. The next week, which I think is easily his best game as a rookie, it's the Seattle 31-10 win, 7 targets, 5 catches, 70 yards, a touchdown. He also forced a defensive pass interference call. Great in the blocking. He seemed to be doing everything that day for the Bills offense. That seemed to be, for me, his sort of coming out party where he had scored before at that point, but that was where it was like, oh, okay, they're forcing him targets and he's succeeding, and his snap percentage as well is up to 82.9%.
There's also something fascinating about Coleman's game that we weren't ready for. Big playability.
Mm-hmm.
He was the guy getting the big plays and flipping the field for you. Even though he doesn't have a skill set that boasts that.
Yeah.
So, am I going to doubt Keon Coleman? No, because I look at the big playability that he was giving you this season, even before the peak of what he was doing before he got injured. Thanks, Jordan Poyer. Traitor.
Well, even on that game, too, 2 targets, 1 catch, and you bring up the big plays, 21 yards.
Yeah. He was very often giving you that 20-yard play. And his impacts may have been limited. That Houston game, they don't get back into that game unless Keon Coleman takes that ball, shuffles all the way down the field. He was only 1 of 5 when it comes to targets for receptions. But that reception, 49 yards and a touchdown, brings Buffalo back into a game that they were very much ready to peter out of.
Yeah, they were. Oh, man, that game was
rough. That was dreadful.
Rough.
And Coleman, with his targets, there was not a good percentage there either. But I'll tell you right now, if he doesn't scamper home for that 49-yard touchdown, that's not even a game.
Mm-hmm.
People are turning it off in the third quarter and we're done here.
And that's something Ryan Fowler brought up too with Keon, is how good of an athlete he is and how kind of seamless he's able to move. That's my thing too, is if he can fine tune his route running and get that little bit more separation. That was the big problem with him early, because even you bring up that Houston game.
Because what can you
the
teach?
The separation. Yeah, you can teach that.
Technique.
Yeah, you can teach that.
You can teach route running. You can't teach the size and ability that he has to go up and get it. Much like how you can't teach the speed that Xavier Worthy has, for example. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The player that he's always going to be linked to. But what you can teach is the technique.
Yeah, it's just I look at those two games. I wonder what, 'cause he misses four, and then, of course, the Miami games. He plays, I think, for a lot of it, but effectively it's cut short because of the wrist injury.
It's not about that game necessarily more than it is the fact that he has to miss four more.
Yeah, I wonder what our conversation is about him. He has 556 yards. He misses four games.
Exactly.
And the trajectory he was on is he was going to start putting up 50-plus, not every game, but we were getting close to every game. He was going to start putting up 50-plus yards, you know, the big games here or there. He was really starting to show out. You know, they play an indie team that I don't think necessarily was that great. San Francisco, they beat up on. Oh, that's a more of a winter wonderland game. But even the Rams game where, I mean, that's a shootout. You know, what does he look like? And then, of course, Detroit, same thing. I mean, he has his first game back, one catch, 64 yards.
And that's the play where Allen is rolling out to his right, buying time, waves Coleman down the field.
Yeah.
So, again,
Keon's got a bit of a rookie year is without the injury. What we're talking about with him.
He's got a big play element that people did not suspect. So, am I going to doubt Keon Coleman here? No. Because he already surprised me in a way that I never thought he had something in his game. So, hey, keep going. And I think the Bills see that too.
Yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of a feeling that the coaches and the GM were a little frustrated with him, although they've then quickly gone back to, like, no, we're not really worried where he is at all. He's 21 years old. He's never dealt with an injury in his life. Like, that is going to be something that is going – you're going to have to deal with that the correct way. It's just do I think he's like Brian Thomas Jr. level, or we're sitting here going like, guys, we're going to have to think about paying him in 3 years? No, I don't think so. But if he all of a sudden puts up 850, 900 yards, seven touchdowns, we're not even having
a positive conversation about him. And what's the next step?
Yeah.
I think we should still have that conversation.
It quickly becomes, if you want a receiver, it is the Josh Palmers that they added.
Yes.
Where it's like, yeah, we just need a guy that's a little bit better of a separator. And has a little bit more of a pop ability that if he's got a window, he can take it a little bit more.
And I think they're conducting themselves in that manner.
In that manner that they think, ooh, what does this look like if he does miss those four games? Plus also, what we ultimately know is not the greatest recovery for him.
Right before we go to break, because I know that's what we're about to do. A couple of Sabres notes for tonight's game against Ottawa. Brady Tkachuk not playing. He's got an upper body injury. That's relevant.
Okay.
And James Reimer in the starting net.
Yep.
And no Greenway, no Norris.
So that sort of begins kind of what you were talking about there, where we're going to start seeing the goaltenders switching back and forth. 803-0550, the number two call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here until 12 o'clock as we get you ready for Sabres Live, as, of course, the Sabres do play tonight against the Ottawa Senators. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we wrap up the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And, of course, today's show is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Derek, you had something fun.
Yes. First of all, I want to remind everyone one more time because, you know, talking with Coach Becky Burke yesterday, I want to keep hammering on this.
Yes.
They are home tomorrow night for the women's NIT with a chance to get to the championship. Against Cleveland State, 6 o'clock at Alumni Arena. And if they outdo the attendance of their opponent, or their opponent-to-be, they will host with a win, obviously. You can't just show up and then they suddenly get it. No. With a win, and if people are there to witness the win, the more people that are there, the better their chances are of hosting the final. But ready? It might still just be the last game at Alumni Arena this year. Get out there anyway.
Yeah, in a very, very good and exciting season.
But now, the thing I wanted to point out was Coastal Carolina just announced that all of their concessions will be free at home football games this fall. Fans can get four items per concession visit with no limit on the number of in-game visits.
Oh.
The items that you can get are hot dogs, nachos, popcorn, and fountain drinks.
Okay.
So obviously, not everything's on the table.
But there are four items that you can get anytime you go to the concession stand at a Coastal Carolina game, and they are free.
I like it.
You want to just go to the, you want to just catch a college football game down at Coastal Carolina, and
they have a teal field in case anyone likes that.
Ooh. And you can grab, just like, say I don't even want anything necessarily, I'm feeling snacky. Just grab a side of nachos and a drink, and you're good. And hey, if your friends stole all your nachos, you can go back and get them at no additional cost.
They definitely are doing this because they have a 21,000 person stadium. It's not too much.
Yes.
To where it's like we are actively hurting ourselves.
Yeah, it's not a bad business sense. But then I saw Brian Koziel tweet something about this of my idea. The Sabres implement this tactic until they make the playoffs. And yeah, such a small stadium, you can get away with it. But I wouldn't mind the idea of sticking it to Jeremy Jacobs.
Trying to look last time Coastal Carolina was good at football.
Like it's Terry Pegula. But guess what? It's Delaware North.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't mind sticking it to Jeremy Jacobs. not a bad idea at all, actually.
I mean, no pro team's ever doing this.
Not even for a night.
Yeah, I love this, but no, I'm also waiting for Coastal Carolina like three games in to be like, this is a horrendous idea. We're going to backtrack. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah. Especially because Coastal Carolina is not.
It's not a big school. They're in the Sun Belt Conference. They are a pretty solid football program for the Sun Belt Conference.
But that's good, at least.
Yeah. But this will last all of 5 minutes.
You said it's not a big stadium. It's not something that's really going to hurt them that badly. You don't think, unless, well, people do what people do and ruin it for the rest of us.
Which is take advantage of it?
Yes. Not even taking advantage, just ruin it for the rest of us.
Yeah.
Somehow. That's going to be the interesting part.
Mm-hmm.
How does it get ruined from here? And I keep thinking about the meme of Elmo, and there's a pile of fruit and there's a pile of something else, and he dives for that.
That's probably what's going to happen. I think it's a fun idea. I don't see it lasting. That's going to do it for me and Derek. We'll be back on tomorrow from 10 to 12, but coming up after a quick timeout. Sabres are in Ottawa tonight. Sabres Live has you covered next. This is WGR.